welcome to episode 111 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Alan Olson, Eric Barseski, hello.
Hello.
All right, let's jump right into the Masters. I guess, quick mention, no link in the show notes, but Paul Casey won his first PGA Tour event in something like 70 starts the week before at the Shell Houston, whatever, and then completely was a non-factor at the Masters.
Yeah, good point. Congratulations, he wins,
And Phil missed the cut, badly.
Yes, which put a little bit too much influence on my picks for the Masters.
Yeah, Phil seems to miss the cut or win.
Yes, which...
But he didn't win this week. No. The winner, of course, in a playoff, Angel Cabrera. Playoff with Chad Campbell and Kenny Perry.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to believe that he's a...
You're nonplussed.
Kinda. I mean, it's kind of weird. I don't want to say he kind of snuck up on everybody, but it's hard to believe he's a two-time majors champion.
Right. I think he shot one under par in both of the winning final rounds. I know he did this year at the Masters. If memory serves, he shot 69 on a par 70 Oakmont layout to kind of, you know, hold on and win that one. He may be the only winner of a major to hit a shank in the final round.
Could very well be. Could very well be. There, I tell you what, for a final round, there were some ugly shots.
Yeah, every time you saw him on Angel Cabrera, it seemed like he was putting for par or hitting some kind of a goofy shot somewhere. I'm not sure how he got to one under par. Obviously, I could look at his card and remember it. But 13 and 15, I think he birdied those. But otherwise, I don't know. What did he do all day? He shot one under par.
I know.
I don't know.
It was kind of hard to believe.
The winner in Augusta shouldn't shoot one under par. And Kenny Perry shot one under par. I think Chad Campbell shot, what?
Two under
or something. Yeah. 300?
He shot 69. Yeah, I mean, for a final round, when you had guys like Phil shooting 5 under and John Merrick 6 under, and, you know, you had some low scores were out there. And like you said, you know, every time you saw Cabrera, he's putting for par from like 15 feet. And he's like, well, what do you do between this tee shot and there?
Yeah, and I forget where Tiger and Phil started the day, tied for 16th or 14th or something. Kenny Perry, Chad Campbell, and Angel Cabrera need to be very happy that nobody, basically, between them and Tiger and Phil, who are way back, nobody in that gap played well, because 4 under would have beat them by 2 by one of their closer pursuers. They should be real happy that none of those middle grouping people played well.
Yeah, I mean, you just had the guys that were, you know, second through, what, fifth place or whatever, nobody showed up. You know, Furyk shoots a +1, Todd Hamilton shoots a +1. Nobody really did anything at the very top of the leaderboard, and the guys that actually shot low, they were just too far back to put some pressure on them, but that was really about it.
And Katy Perry played well. He had 20-foot birdie putts on seemingly every hole. The few times he missed the green in a final round, save for the last couple of holes, you know, he got up and down fairly easily. He just missed a lot of birdie putts. So he played a good 16 holes of golf. And a lot of people, myself included, thought the tournament was over on 16 when he almost aced it. So the question is, did he choke? We'll table that for now. Did Chad Campbell choke in the playoff? He missed a 3-footer for par that would have kept him in the continued playoff after hitting it into the bunker from the middle of the fairway. He shot a 69, so he didn't choke during the final round. You know,
he had a good final round to come back. You know, in the playoff, hard to say. I mean, it's not his first time that he's ever been in a situation, you know, toward the end of you know, attempting to win a major. So you can't say that.
Well, and in the Ryder Cup, I seem to remember he was the one that hit a 5-iron on the 18th hole to 2 feet or something, to basically knock a point out of, or steal a half a point from Ian Poulter and Justin Rose or something, perhaps, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Didn't he stiff on the Ryder Cup on the 18th hole?
It sounds familiar. You know, it's hard to say if it was a choke. I mean, to say he missed a three-footer, and everybody goes, you know, it's a 3-foot putt. Well, 3 foot at Augusta is a 10-footer anywhere else.
All right. So, Kenny Perry. Yes? No?
A choke?
Yeah.
I would if it was a choke, you'd have to say probably, I would say 60-40 towards a choke. I wouldn't say it's a full blown. He did have the lead. He did have a lot of birdie putts. He missed a couple short ones.
I'm going up around the 75-80%. Just the last four holes. He honestly should have made 4 bogeys on those last 4 holes. I'm counting the playoffs holes. He was fortunate to get up and down. I mean, let's review them. You know, somehow on 17 he blows his drive way right, and somehow ends up 50 yards back of Chad Cam or back of Cabrera, but in the fairway, right in the middle of the fairway. Blows it way over the green, flubs his chip by what he describes as a mental error because he has a yip in his right hand with any club other than his 60 or 64 degree wedges. And I've always defined a choke as a mental error that may result in some physical manifestation, and not going with a 60, if that's what you could be comfortable in, would be a mental error. Why would you pick a club that you know you're yippy with to chip? He bladed it, he bellied it, he said so, and that right there, that alone would constitute a choke in my mind. 18, from a good lie, well back in the fairway bunker where the lip does not come into play, to totally miss the green and not just miss it, but miss it 20 yards left. You know, you put him there, 8 times out of 10, he hits the green. Without pressure anyway.
Right.
The other 2 times, he's maybe just short. The first hole of the playoff, from the middle of the fairway, he misses the green with an 8-iron in his hands. Makes a good chip to save par, but could have been a bogey. And then number 10, you know, he from the middle of the fairway, again, misses the green 20 yards left. Hits a so-so chip, hits a so-so putt. Could have been, you know, was 3 over in his last 4 holes.
Right.
With a 2-shot lead.
Yep, and could have, and had he made a couple birdie putts earlier in the round, he would have had a little bit more of a cushion. And,
right.
You know, maybe the nerves, maybe fatigue. Who knows? Hit a draw in every hole.
Yeah, it's not Scott Hoke-esque. You know, I mean, he didn't miss a 2-footer that never touched the cup or anything like that. But you put him there, you put any pro in the middle of the fairway with an 8-iron in their hands, and they got to hit the green.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Not just hit the green. I mean, they're going to stick it pretty close. So, yeah, you know, with something like that.
The chip on 17 is, though, where it kind of started for me. You know, he got a lucky break. His ball came out in the middle of the fairway, hit the green, sneak away with a par after a bad drive. And you know, you can hack it up 18 and make a bogey and still walk away with a green jacket.
Right.
So that chip wasn't even close. I mean, that almost rolled up. That rolled off the front of the green. He had a 30-footer for par, right? Shingo Katayama had a good round. John Merrick had a good round. Steve Flesh and Steve Stricker showed flashes of greatness. Stricker was pretty consistent throughout the week, but I think we saw about 4 golf shots of his the entire week. And Jim Furyk, I would call him perhaps the most overrated golfer of our generation now that people have stopped talking about Chris DeMarco. Jim Furyk won a U.S. Open, 13 PGA Tour events, including that U.S. Open, of course. But what's he done lately, really? He won the Canadian Open a couple of years ago.
That is quite surprising. I guess I hadn't realized he'd only won 13 times.
He doesn't seem to close very well.
No, and you look at his rounds. I mean, he shoots, 2 of the days, he shoots 66, 68. And, you know, there again, with 2 rounds like that, you'd have to assume he'd, you know. But, of course, then he shoots 74 and then 73 in the final round. So that's just really, really surprising. And, yeah, I mean, you probably could make the case for him being quite overrated.
I like him. You know, he's a good guy, so. Not to take anything away from him, but, you know, golf is very much a game of what have you done for me lately, and I just feel Jim Furyk has not played well when it matters lately. Obviously, he played well in the Ryder Cup, but that being a completely different atmosphere and stuff, so. Finally, we'll get around to talking about Phil and Tiger. You know, honestly, I gave them no shot at the start of the day. They would have had to post rounds of, you know, you figure 63, you know, tie the all-time low round in a major. They both started the day at 4-under, so a 63, 9-under would have gotten them to 13-under, which would have won it. But I didn't even see 13-under. You know, I thought 14-under should win. You had 2 guys at 11-under starting the day and 1 guy at 9-under. 13-under should have maybe been in a playoff, but those guys should have been able to pick up 2 or 3 shots. So I didn't see that as being possible. I mean, so I was thinking, you know, Tiger Phil might have had to shoot 61 or 62. Turns out the way Mr. Parr, Kenny Perry, and Angel Cabrera played, 12-under would have gotten him into a playoff. Phil could have gotten a 12-under if he had not dunked his ball at 12 and if he had made an eagle putt.
Yeah, I mean, with the incredible front nine that he played, I mean, he could have really, he really should have made a move.
He only needed to shoot a 34 on the back nine, 2-under, and, you know, with 2 reachable par fives. And he could have birdied 17, but he missed a short one there.
Yeah, it was an impressive round, and, you know, for Phil, I mean, the final round was quite spectacular. He had some hiccups and then, you know, dunking his ball in the water on 12.
Tiger Woods, he wasn't, Phil's driving was off seemingly a lot of the week. Tiger's driving was off in parts, but at the same time, Tiger's other stuff was off here and there as well. Tiger didn't play well at all. And honestly, if you give him pars on 17 and 18 for the week, he's tied for the lead. And that's scary too. For a guy that's reputed for his finishing ability. Not only does he bogey 17 and 18 in the final round again, as we saw in 2005, but he played them poorly all week. The only exception being the time he missed a 4-foot birdie putt on 17 to make a routine par that should have been one better still.
Yeah, you know, I really thought that when he made the eagle on 8, that would just, you know, the floodgates would open and he would just start dropping some more birdies. And next thing you know, he's at the top of the leaderboard and it just never materialized. And
yeah, he had makeable birdie putts at 9, 10, 11, and 12, if I remember correctly. I know 10, 11, and 12 he did. 11 was straight up the hill right on Phil's line. 12, it just slid low. And then, of course, 13, he was okay. But, you know, 15, he thought that was going in too. But then just a birdie.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, to really bag on a guy shooting 68 on the final day, but he just, for all four rounds, he still doesn't look crisp, I guess would be the only thing I could think of. There's just parts of his game that just not quite there.
Yeah, missing greens with 8 irons and pitching wedges is, you know, Kenny Perry-esque. But in the second round, you know, things you don't expect from Tiger Woods. His short game let him down a few times too. You know, his pitch on 18. The final day or 17 not executed as crisply as he would have liked. Who do you think between the two of them feels like they won the battle? Obviously Phil shot one shot lower, but Phil's also the only one to make a double bogey and you know, have to rely on a whole lot of luck with some of his bad drives. So who do you think feels like they won?
I would have to say Phil. He beat Tiger by a stroke, which to him might be the next best thing to winning a green jacket.
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back after this, so stay tuned.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke.
And from the first tee to the 18th green,
there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball. And in a game where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play
makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
And that's why
there's only one ball I'd ever play.
That's why there's only one ball
I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back. This week's forum topic of the week, Sergio Garcia, after his final round, I forget where he finished, but he shot like a 73 or 74 in his final round. Someone asked him how he liked the golf course. He said, quote, "I don't like it, to tell you the truth. I don't think it's fair. It's too tricky. Even when it's dry, you still get mud balls in the middle of the fairway. It's too much of a guessing game." He was then asked what they could do to change it, and he said, again, quote, "They can do whatever they want. It's not my problem. I just come here and play and then go home. That's about it." 18 hours later, his management company released a statement, an apology. You know what? I'd like to see Augusta National exercise its privilege or its right as an invitational tournament to not invite Sergio. It's gone too far. You know, until someone does something, you know, gets away with these, makes these statements, and then half-ass apologies. You remember when he spat in the cup? It wasn't even so much the spitting in the cup part that was annoying. It was the fact he's like, His apology was basically, it's no big deal. I didn't spit. I just let it go down. It went in the center of the hole. It's no big deal. That's not an apology. That's not accepting that you did something rude and saying, you know what, that was stupid of me. It won't happen again. But
yeah, I mean
he's 29 years old. He's not a kid anymore.
No, you would like to think at some point the light bulb is going to go off and maybe maturity would kick in. You know. I have no idea. It's just really quite amazing that he would make comments like that and that it took his management company 18 hours to issue a quote-unquote apology, which I'm sure some wonk wrote it.
Yeah, so should he be invited to next year's Masters?
No.
He doesn't play well on them.
No, I mean, I think it would send a very bold statement from Augusta to sit there and not invite him. On the other hand, they could kind of turn the other cheek and say, we'll take his comments. We, you know, we take praise and criticism, and we'll see him in 2010. Miss the cut.
It'll be interesting. The Golf Channel pointed this out with the U.S. Open returning to Bethpage, especially given his comments here. How well he'll be received there. He honestly may better think about not showing up there.
He may have
a bizarre thumb injury, yes, or something just before the U.S. Open.
Too much PlayStation 3 or something. He got carpal tunnel. Right. Yeah. Bethpage is not going to... The fans are not going to be nice.
Right. Tell us what you think in the forum thread. We'll link to it. And there's video in there and everything. So let us know what you think. We'll be right back with the wrap-up after this.
The most important shot is the one you're about to hit. A shot on Thursday is every bit as critical
as one on Sunday afternoon.
In competition, one shot can be the difference.
The difference it takes to win.
That's why the ball you play makes a difference. So the question isn't, why do I play tightest?
But rather,
why would I play anything else?
Why would I play anything else?
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back for a wrap-up. I thought we'd just go over our staff predictions. I think both you and I picked Tiger Woods. Yeah, the same number, too. Minus 10. Minus 10 looked like a good number for a long time, despite the fact that Chad Campbell got to minus 11 or something in the first round before kind of falling apart at the end.
I don't know about you, but when I picked minus 10, I was like, okay, the weather's going to have to be perfect for him to get to double digits, and here they're practically there on day one. I was like, oops.
In the first round. Well, they sent all the easy pins in the first day, and then they were kind of like, oh, crap, that's a little too much scoring.
But that's all right. I mean, the scoring was just about perfect.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the course part. Best showing by a player under 30. Anthony Kim had a good showing, kind of. Very 75-65, 72-74. That 65 included 11 birdies, a Masters record.
Yeah, that was an impressive round to watch him. But then, I mean, that was it. Shoot 75, 72, 74, the other three. So other than that little that round, that was about it out of him.
It's weird. He shot the low round in the round where a lot of people kind of rebounded off a good round into a kind of a bad round. You know, Chad Campbell shot 9 under par in his first day and then shoots, whatever he shot in the second day, 2 under or something. The first day was the easy day and he shoots 75 and then he shoots 65 on the difficult day. So whatever. Hunter Mahan and Sean O'Hare both tied for 10th. Both had kind of an up and down week, although I think Sean O'Hare was a little more consistent. Mahan, I think, birdied 4 holes in a row with chip-ins and stuff and all kinds of nuts, but then had double bogeys and stuff thrown in there.
Yeah, it was impressive for Sean O'Hare to come back after shooting a 76 in the second round.
Camilo Villegas tied for 13th, very quietly.
Yeah, I didn't even think he was going to make the cut at one point.
And I wrote, Anthony Kim has been too busy chasing the IMG money train. Camilo hasn't shown up on the radar yet in 2009. I guess I got that wrong. Danny Lee may have the game to win in some places, but Augusta isn't one of them yet. Rory's in over his head. I kind of got that wrong. I picked Nick Watney to have a top 15 finish. He finished 19th.
Pretty close.
So, pretty close. You picked Camilo Villegas getting a top 5 finish, tied for 13th, so you were in the range. That's all you said.
Not bad.
So, hey, we're close. And I forget where Rory finished exactly.
Down a ways.
Tied for 20. Yeah. He didn't beat my pick. So there. Greg Norman, I think he shot rounds of 70 and 77. I believe both of us had him missing the cut.
Yes. Yep. Both had him not around. And, you know.
He shot minus 2 in the first round. It was looking good for a while. And then Larry Mize upstaged him by shooting 5 under.
Yeah. I thought he was going to make the cut. I'm like, oh, going to eat crow again. And then the second day, I don't know, that back nine of him was just...
He tied Tiger Woods on the first day. But then I think, again, a 77 or something. So he wasn't even necessarily close to the cut. Biggest disappointment, I had Trevor Immelman not playing well lately, and that held up. But I said the bigger disappointment will be Padraig Harrington's absence on the weekend leaderboards. That held up.
Yeah, he just wasn't around. I think he, shot a 9 on one of the holes. But he had one of the better post-round interviews after the whole Sergio thing, so we'll give him that.
We'll give him that credit. Yeah, he stuck around, too.
Yeah, that was...
He didn't leave.
Yeah, 3 rounds of 73, you know, yeah, no Patty Slim, but...
You had Phil Mickelson missing the cut, so... you dunked it in the water on 12 there yourself.
What do I know? And I think somebody made me eat a little crow, yeah. But, you know, I was going with the he's missing, but then I should have figured he misses the cut, and then he plays well. I got the sequence wrong.
Well, I'm taking some credit here for the biggest surprise. I wrote, someone goes for a par 5 and 2. No, that was the joking part. I said, we'll get to see a little Phil Tiger action on Sunday.
Yeah.
I should have stopped there.
Yeah, they won't be in the same group. Oops.
They won't be in the same group, but they'll both be in contention come the back 9. So, I mean, I got like 2/3 of that right.
That was very nice.
All you need is one player to shift positions and they wouldn't be in the same group. So... That's the small one of the three. Phil Tiger action on Sunday, and they'll be in contention on the back 9. I got that right. We'll focus on the positive. As for you, there's not really much positive to focus on.
Ernie Els. Thanks, buddy.
Ernie Els plays himself into the final pairing and gives Tiger a run for his money. Now, remember, Ernie is like 2 3/4 of the way through his 3-year plan.
Darn it. I got to wait for the 3-year. Yeah, the 3-year plan threw me off a little bit, but
it's not really working out for his 3-year plan started. Maybe it starts today. Course chatter. Billy Payne has made some improvements, but he can't reverse 10 years of changes in 1 year or they'll kick him out of the club. The weather held up. You wrote blah, blah, blah. So what do you think about the course setup this year?
I thought the course setup was very nice. Now, there again, they got away with some really nice weather. If the weather would have been like they've had the last couple of years, it could have been scary. But it turned out quite well. I thought they had some nice pin placements. They did let the guys showcase their skills and throw some nice scores up. 2010, it might be par. It may have been a little too much scoring for the tourney. But I thought it was just the right amount. You get somebody down to the 10, 11 under, and I just didn't want to have somebody shoot 75 on the last day and win it.
Yeah, well, 71 was pretty close, and I'm going to disagree with you. I think the course setup was a very, very, very small step back towards what we should see. I still think the trees on 7, the rough in a lot of places, the trees right on 11, the trees in a lot of places again, and the existence of rough. Those problems were masked this year, I think, by the fact that the greens played softer than most normal PGA Tour events, let alone the Masters. Phil Mickelson hit a shot on 7 on Sunday that he had to hit a low punch. It was a big draw, so I'd call it a hook. A low punch hook out of the trees, and the ball stopped 5 feet from where it landed. If any ball should run out anywhere on the PGA Tour, it would be that kind of shot, and that thing stopped 5 feet from where it landed for a tap-in birdie, basically. But that shouldn't happen, and I think the only reason we saw the scoring we saw was because the greens were soft. Brandel Chamblee ranted about it on the Golf Channel quite a few times. He said, we're seeing the scoring we want, but we're not seeing the shots we want rewarded. We're seeing marginal ball striking. We're seeing no separation between crisp ball striking and marginal ball striking. A crisp shot has more spin, a little more height, and stops faster. A marginal shot on a soft green will stop just as fast, but on a firmer green will run through. I think the low scoring was right where it should be, but I think they had to trick up the greens in that they had to keep them wetter and softer than normal. Name another Masters where we can remember balls stopping as quickly as we saw this year and ball marks being made as big as we saw this year. I can't.
No, I can't either. Most of the time it's like they're going to hit on a big pad of concrete.
Right, and so that's where you need the angles to come into certain pins. Right, driving to the right on 11. Is an angle. So being rewarded for play that way rather than just being able to fly it close to the hole so it stops, that's what I'd like to see. They still need to get back to that. Augusta is supposed to be a strategic golf course, not a drive it in the fairway, stick it close to the pin course. I mean, that removes 95% of what Augusta's about to me, and that's what they set up this week. They almost turned it into, again, the greens were softer than most normal PGA Tour events.
Yeah, that's definitely true, and like you said in your...
Did I convince you, or are you still sticking with what you said?
Well, I'm still sticking with what I said. I think you made a good point in your predictions about they can't reverse 10 years of changes in 1 year. If they can make these subtle, we might see the Masters that...
Right, so maybe if they can keep the winning score at 10 under and slowly firm up the greens through the years as they reverse slowly some of the changes, I think that's a good plan.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Because at least it's exciting in the meantime.
Right, because you don't want...
It stays exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we see the U.S. Open already. We don't need to see it again.
And the U.S. Open was more fun last year. Not just because Tiger was in it, but because the course setup was better. So
we'd like to see some scoring, just not 30 under.
And eventually at Augusta, I would like to see good shots rewarded rather than balls plugging on the green. That does it for episode 111, the Masters edition of the Golf Talk Podcast of Masters 2009. Last concluded, and Kenny Perry choked it away. But Angel Cabrera, who doesn't speak English, won. So
congratulations.
Or whatever that is in Spanish or something.
Hey, he has more majors than Jim Fuhr. Oh.
Right. And we'll next see him in 2 more years, I guess. I don't know. We'll next see him making a 13 on a par 3 at the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
All right. Well, bye.
See ya.